Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Hi, Ben. Well, we haven't got Jane, but we've got an amazing guest today because we're speaking with Nick Willis, the Olympian, and recently the first person ever to run 20 sub 4 minute miles 20 years in a row.
Yeah, it's incredible. Before anyone gets like too much, oh my God, like sub 4 minute mile, this is going to be intense. This is, you know, oh, it's unperceivable. I can't, because that's how I feel. So, like when these incredible athletes who can perform these phenomenal times and you kind of like it, you can almost feel like it's unrelatable. I want to stop you right there because Nick just hands out for free mad knowledge.
Great advice. Great applicable advice for milers of all speeds.
Exactly. And Nick's here just to promote that wonderful distance. So it was really nice talking to him and you'll enjoy it. So, you know, stick around.
In equally exciting news, Ben, how's your running?
Good, actually. Just... We were allowed
sub four.
Yeah, a couple of sub fours. Just banged them out. Sub 4 minute 400 meters. We're back in the office, Rick. But you missed out the first week back in the office since Plan B or whatever the government were calling it has been lifted. So we're back and we had a team run last week, which is always a joy out with the gang. I did some running this morning to. Doing some jobs. Do you do that, Rick? Do you ever do errands? Running?
Running? Yeah, increasingly. I think when time is tight, the ways to make runs actually useful for other people, that's a big plus, I think. So
I ran.
I like it, yeah. And I think it's very... Also, it probably feels like that's probably why we ran... That's probably why we started running, wasn't it? We ran not for pleasure, but for to actually
get stuff done. Yeah, so, I ran to Screwfix to get some bits to fix my sink.
Oh, lovely.
But I went the longer way, which meant I saw a bit more of like an interesting part of my local area rather than just down the main busy road. But yeah, it was nice. I need to listen to Nick's advice, not get too excited about running and doing too much too soon because I haven't really got any plans, but there's a risk of just doing a lot, if you see what I mean.
Sure. Yeah. I think one of the great things Nick talks about is sort of having a bit of a structure, which and having a bit of a progression to training. But one of the takeaways I think of it, that this has obviously been a thing for Nick. I don't think he set out to run 20.
Are you going to spoil it? Are you going to spoil this now for everyone? Right? Are you giving too many spoilers?
Okay. Well, what I really wanted to say was that I think it's quite a nice thing in running, regardless of how quick you are, to have maybe something that you always try and be fit enough to do a certain something every year.
Yeah,
do you mean?
I get that.
So for me, I've always been like I know that I'm in the kind of shape that I would like to be in and consider myself to be like fit. If I can run like under 1:30 for a half, it's always been a sort of like a marker. And I probably would be in some ways a little bit disappointed personally if on a kind of flat road course, if I didn't do that, I'd think, okay, I need to get fit.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's maybe a time where that I would try to do for, you know, maybe see if I can do that for the next 10 years. Do you have any kind of benchmarks for running or one that you would consider? Because I think it can be a way of kind of keeping, I guess just kind of keeping you interested and keeping, you know, training a bit and all the rest
of it. Yeah, I mean, me and our esteemed editor-in-chief Andy Dixon spoke about this once. And we both concluded that it wasn't necessarily like time specific in terms of speed, but just having the base fitness to comfortably tick off a 10 miler. So I mean that could be that you know you, you could you could be doing 10-minute miles. It doesn't, I'm not saying it's like you have to be doing like 7-minute miles or something. Do you know what I mean? It's not a race, but it's just having that base fitness to go. And I think probably about leg condition and like everything feeling good that you could just do a 10-miler and it'd be like, yep, still got that. So it's not necessarily like a performance thing like your one, but I kind of feel like having a general running condition. Because I feel like 10 miles having... The muscles and the ligaments and the tendons, everything has to be feeling to do 10 miles. You have to be like, everything has to be in good form. I think that's like a good distance.
Yeah. It's a good marker, isn't it? Yeah.
But, I think I prefer the your approach because certainly what Nick talks about, which is the mile, you know, you've definitely got to build up to it if you want to do well at it. But at the same time, it can sit there burning away just maybe sort of.
Love that. Anyway, it'd be interesting to know what listeners have.
Yeah.
If they've got a kind of yearly returning goal, let us know, podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
Could be stuff like you've got your favourite local hill, and if you know you can get it up it in under 3 minutes or something like that, then you're on fine fettle.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It can be a training thing for sure. Yeah. Tell you what, Ben, we got a letter in actually that was in reference to last week's podcast, which was on Dom Ferris from Trash Free Trails.
Love it.
Very interesting, kind of looking at... Looking at kind of cleaning up our trails and the reasons, you know, why people might actually litter in the first place.
Well, it's on the internet, Rick. Anyone who hasn't listened to it, get it. Yeah. Finish listening to this one, then go back to the previous episode and listen to that.
But anyway, so we got it was from a guy called Shane from Devon. Don't know his surname, but Shane wrote in and said, listening to Trash Free Trails on the podcast got me thinking the other day, just why is Lucozade the number one item of trash found out there, which is what Dom said. I could accept Coca-Cola or Monster, Red Bull, but Lucozade. So I asked my 15-year-old son why this might be, and his reply was, due to the sugar tax, they're a pound a bottle cheaper than energy drinks such as Red Bull and Monster. So that's possibly a simple enough reason why that is. It was also interesting a few days after your pod to see a trio of lads at the skate park next to our school, accompanied by three bottles of Lucozade, which backs up this claim. So, yeah, it might just be as simple as it's a cheaper option.
Shane from Devon and your son, thank you for adding some valuable market research into that because I was wondering that. I sort of thought, I didn't realise that. I thought maybe like advertising had done its job and everyone was suddenly perceived that Lucozade was still the sports drink of choice, but maybe it's just because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
There we go. Perfect.
But there you go. Yeah. Anyway, should we get Nicole?
Let's talk to our guest of the week.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
So our guest this week is a two-time Olympic medalist and recently became the first person to run a sub 4 minute mile 20 years in a row. So welcome to the Runners World podcast, Nick Willis.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's an honor to be here.
What an achievement, Nick. I mean, obviously you're incredibly successful middle distance athlete anyway, but there's 20 sub 4 minute miles. Did you ever think that might be possible when it kind of ran your first one?
No, I never imagined myself running past probably late 20s. My brother was a sub 4 minute miler himself, but his career ended when he was 26 with a knee injury. So I just assumed that was part and parcel for being a runner, right?
Yeah, that's it. So as you take on a challenge until you explode, and that's as good as it gets.
And I was a willing participant in that, when thinking that was going to be the case. I even remember my dad when I was 31 and I'd had some success, right? I'd won an Olympic medal and a couple of Commonwealth medals. And he's like, yeah, it's probably time to hang it up, Nick. You want to be able to like move around with your kids. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is actually keeping me more healthy. The second I stop running, I'm going to start doing things way worse for my body than running is.
We'll get into the consistency of it because that seems to be the biggest sort of like hottest take from this whole thing, is to be consistent over the distance for that long. But Can we talk a little bit about being an Olympian and all that stuff before we get into the other thing that everyone seems to talk about with you? And just like your Olympic time, your time being an Olympian and how that was for you. And, you know, how do you look back on that now?
Yeah, I have such a vast and varied experience, obviously, having been to five Olympics over a very different stages of my life from an a wide-eyed 21-year-old where I was just soaking up every possible element of that Olympic experience, to when I was 38 going to my fifth games in a pandemic and all of that sort of stuff. But I think my real Olympic experience starts just like everyone else who might be listening or has ever turned on the TV and watched the games. Like, I'm a fan far before I ever was a participant. And I was just captivated. I watched every possible second, and on the old VHS tapes, I recorded all of the races. So to finally get to the games myself and be one of the people on the other side of the screen, I absolutely envisioned little kids like I used to be watching likewise, and I'm being proud that there's a New Zealander on the start line. And whether I finished first or last, that was the secondary to the fact that there was a black singlet on the start line with all these other great nations. So I felt very honored and privileged to represent them proudly, and hopefully give them the belief that it could possibly be them one day.
With the mile, Nick, it's obviously, I mean, in Britain, we obviously think about a sub 4 minute mile because of Roger Bannister, and it's a real classic distance. Did it have that kind of magical quality for you when you kind of first really seriously got into running? Were you thinking, right, the sub 4 minute mile was something that you were like, I guess it's a notch, isn't it, on any very serious athlete's wants to get under their belt?
Yeah, I mean, I first got into running when I was 4 years old, so I didn't really care about the mile at that time. Like, I did the 60 meter race and the high jump and the relays and all of that sort of stuff. But I actually got to witness a sub 4 minute mile run on grass by the great Rod Dixon at a local grass track like 400 meters from my house. So I thought, oh, that's cool, because like, this guy's an Olympic, well, he's like an Olympian, a New York City Marathon champion. Like, he was a hero. Like, that was just awesome.
Yeah.
But when I became old enough to like start thinking about distance running, my brother, who's 8 years older than me, he was trying to achieve this endeavor well before I was, and he didn't succeed for a handful of years, and then when he finally did it was a really big deal. And he was my hero, right? And all of the guys he raced, I thought of, wow, these guys are like next level if they're beating my brother, who's like the greatest runner ever. So yeah, that sort of set the stage obviously for when I finally had a chance. And then I ran a 4:01 mile just after I finished high school, like a month after, and that sort of set the stage for it, launched my name to the national and international sort of running world. And so it sort of, Nick's going to be the next guy to keep the New Zealand torch flying after all of the greats that we've had in the past. So I was excited about that opportunity, that people were going to open a lot of doors to give me that chance to try and do that.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about the first time you got under four?
Yeah, it was well, again, I ran the 4:01 in high school, and then the following year when I took a gap year after high school and I tried to beat it the next year at the same meet, and I thought, well, of course I'm going to run faster. I've improved every year, but I only ran a 4:04 the following year in that same race. And so I had this monkey on my back now. I was like, I got to get this out of the way. And when I finally started getting in shape, it was the following year I was in America at college. And I knew I was ready to do it, but then you have to have the right race sort of play out and have the opportunity. And I remember the night before, my training partner and I, we were sharing a hotel room, and we were trying to decide, all right, who's going to be the one go behind the rabbit? Because the pacemaker will get you maybe a third of the race through.
Yeah.
And then someone's going to be left out there as the sitting duck to keep the pace going. I was like, no, you do it. No, I'll do it. You do it. And like, we're sort of going back and forth, because whoever was going to lead was going to get beaten by the other person. We were so similar in ability, but we both knew we were ready to break four. And I was like, I'll do it. I need a sub four. Like, I don't care if you beat me. And this was very counter to the way I typically like to run. I like to sit in the back and bide my time and save my energy and go for the win at the end. But this time I was like, no, I don't care if I get beaten. I just need to get this time. And so I'm really proud of that. I led most of the way, and sure enough, four guys passed me in the last couple of hundred meters, and I finished fifth. But it was very personal, like, finally get this sort of weight off my shoulders. And after the race, I left the building and got on my cell phone and called my dad back in New Zealand. I was my first year living overseas, and so a little bit of homesickness. And so it was quite an intimate personal moment between me and my dad, which is very counter to how it was when I did this one more recently, when I shared it with my wife and my kids and my coach and my friends and my family. Like, my life is here in America now.
How did you go then from, as you say, like this one, this little personal target, kind of replicating what your brother had achieved, to then it morphing into this thing that kept rolling and rolling every year, and to the point where you've got like an event on New Year's Eve hosted for you to try and get that 20th one?
Well, to be honest, it sort of took care of itself mostly. The fact that the mile and the 1500 meters was the event that I seemed to excel in most out of all of the track and field disciplines. I was just trying to be the best runner in the world at that event, and the big events around the world who wanted me in their races happened to not be mile races, whether it be indoor races in America or the Emsley Car Mile at the in London, or up in Gateshead or in Sheffield. I ran in a bunch of different ones there, or in New Zealand, like the feature race was a mile, because the tradition of Bannister, and we sort of like the old English tradition, we maintain the mile as the feature event. And so I managed to tick them off without realizing that I was just racing to try and win races and make prize money and make a career out of it. And it wasn't until the 17th year that I'd done it in succession that I suddenly was informed about this. There's like a streak record, and there was a list of different athletes who had done it a number of times, and the person who was leading, who had the most years of successive sub 4 minute miles, was a fellow New Zealander, John Walker. And I was never able to win Olympic gold or break the world record in the mile like he was, but maybe I could beat him in the streak, right? And so I'm 36, I think it was at the time. I can keep running for another couple of years. This is enough of a carrot to justify getting out of the door and doing the training that most 38-year-olds and 37-year-olds would think, rubbish, I don't need to do that to my body anymore. So yeah, that was the motivation.
Can we talk about the trail in the next? Presumably you've had to slightly change it as you've got into your mid-30s. Is it fair to say that you have to kind of adapt a little bit as you get older, and some of the stuff you could get away with when you were 23 or something you can't really do now?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I haven't actually changed a ton in the last 10 years, even the last 15 years. I made the major change to my training when I was about 23, where I used to do a lot of hard intervals, a lot of fast stuff, the stuff that has you leaning over the rubbish bin after a workout, where you've got that lactate headache and you just want to die, right? I got rid of that from my training when I was about 23 anyway, and so I ran a lot more like a 10,000 meter runner in my training, who also did hill sprints and did 100 meter sprints in training. So I worked both ends of the spectrum, but neither is like that gut-wrenching training. It's just like that toothache pain. It's a lot like what Jakob Ingebrigtsen and these new guys out of Norway are doing. We started that about 15 years ago, and it's a much more sustainable type of training, and you can do it on your own a lot more. You don't have to have a coach like holding you accountable to these like just terrible experiences on the track. That's not a sustainable type of training. I think that's why I was able to do it longer, and why I haven't had to make too many adjustments now. I'll bet the other sort of interesting thing is I've actually had a significant number of injuries through a lot of my career, but none of any consequence in the last 5 years. I've actually been the most healthy I've ever been, and I chalk that a lot down to becoming a father and like starting to do all of the activities with my kids as they sort of went through their progressions from crawling to walking to running, and like all of the different obstacles and games that they like to play, I slowly adapted to their movement patterns in a way that was like gradual enough that I now can run through the jungle gym and hang on the monkey bars and yeah, go through the tunnels and wrestle on a trampoline. My body's actually used in a much more three-dimensional way than it was for so many years of my running, where you have such a linear movement patterns. Anything that's sort of different to that, you're suddenly vulnerable to pinging a muscle, right? So I'm a lot stronger and more well-rounded athlete than I was when I was younger because of my kids.
That's great to hear. And it's quite often you're told the kind of opposite, aren't you? Like parenthood's going to make you maybe less of a good runner, but you know, there are other benefits obviously for having kids, but it's nice to hear that actually there can be a running benefit to it as well. Yeah.
I know, I'm tired. I'm really tired.
Well, it, honestly, sure it's the reason. I mean, most people listening here probably do the marathon, and there's a temptation for me to like give the marathon a go, but I've decided I'm not willing to really do more than about 50 miles a week anymore. And for me, I'm not going to have a world-class performance in a marathon off that. I'd need to do 80 to 120 miles a week.
Sure.
And that would just really detract from family life. I want to still be able to do all of those activities with my kids every day. And I've got all the energy I need off 50 miles a week. But once I get up to a 90, I'm just on the couch the whole time and pretty miserable.
The training you talked about sounds really interesting and much more appealing, as you say, than the kind of hammering yourself at the track, or which I think is something that even lots of amateur runners probably do some sessions too hard, and it's almost like their best running happens on like Tuesday night or something, and that, rather than the race day. Could you just tell us a little bit more? So when you talk about the fast stuff, like 100 meter sprints, we're talking kind of strides here, stuff that actually isn't really hurt. It's more a kind of like muscle impetus part. Like how did you get that speed in there?
Yeah, so basically my standard way of like keeping my body fast and have fast twitch activation is in three ways. So firstly, in the weight room, I'll lift heavy weights but on low reps, and then on the hills I'll do hill sprints for like once a week. I'll do like 4 to 6 times only 10 seconds, and I'll like take a 3-minute rest between each sprint, but like I really get myself full recovery, then it'll all out sprint just for 10 seconds, and you're really having to recruit those fast twitch muscles as you run up the hill, because that's creating that resistance for your muscles. And then thirdly, once my shins and my feet and my legs are ready to, I've given myself maybe a 2 or 3 month lead time to get my body up to that level, I'll do sprints the same way, but on the track and spikes. And so the key is to like build into all of those different areas over a 2 or 3 month period. We all know that you can't go from 0 to 100 miles a week in a couple of weeks. You got to spread that over a 3-month period. The same applies to all other types of physical like stress exposure. You got to like gradually adapt to that that stress load. And so, but once you're at that level, sprinting is actually the best form of stretching and mobility exercises you can do. It's just like animals or cheetahs, you don't ever see them stretching, but because they're sprinting all of the time, they're putting their muscles and their joints through the full range of motion. And it's the best way to prevent injuries once you're at that ability to like actually do it, and that activity itself isn't causing injuries, right?
Yeah, right.
So if I'm doing like 10,000 meter training and getting really strong from long intervals and long rounds and tempo rounds and threshold rounds and fartleks, and I'm super fast from the hill sprints and the weights and the track sprints, the other stuff in the middle is gravy. You only need about 2 or 3 weeks of that stuff each season. You don't have to do huge. I still do it, but it's in much smaller doses at a really concentrated portion of the season as the final icing on the cake. The cake is the main work that you put in, and that's just the real fine tuning at the end.
It's good to hear, actually, especially the approach of keeping it sensible and level in the progression, especially when it comes to the gym and stuff. I feel like that's the sort of people can get sucked into, just that being like, I've got to go and absolutely hammer myself in the gym now to make myself go faster.
Well, that's why I think the parenthood angle is the real key. I didn't suddenly jump into playing tag on the jungle gym with my nephews or nieces. I would have gotten injured because they were already at a level I wasn't ready for. But your kid takes 2 or 3 years to slowly adapt to those movements. And so I had like a very gradual build out, and now I can do things that I never thought my body would ever get back to being able to do.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If anyone listening, Nick, because what I like about the mile is that obviously someone who's like a brilliant runner like yourself, the sub four can be something, but you can go all the way back where it can be like a sub five for like a club runner, like a sub six, sub seven, sub eight. What advice would you give us when it comes to actually racing the mile? So some of the training I think is really applicable and that's great, but when it actually comes to executing it on the day, your best mile, what would you say?
Well, the problem with the mile is it's just as delicate a balance for pace judgment as the marathon. If you screw up that first 400 meters, it's going to come back and bite you in the end really badly, just like a marathon does. What most people end up doing is they do an okay, they either go a little bit too quick in the first 400 meters, and then they settle in on the second one. The second 400 is okay, but then their third quarter, they totally have a brain meltdown and they like back off big time because the pain's too much for them. And then they rally the last 200 meters again. And so is this whole fluctuation, and it really doesn't sound that different to a marathon, like for a lot of people, maybe not the rally at the end. But the beauty of the mile, like in a marathon, if you screw it up, you have to wait another 3 or 4 months before you can have another crack at it. You literally can do a mile, if you do a training block for 8 to 10 weeks, you could run 3 or 4 miles in succession in consecutive weeks after that training block, and you have a chance to right the ship. So I say, go in, no holds barred on the first attempt. Just go out and run it however you want. And then from that point, okay, I ran a 6:10 mile, but I like look at, if you like look at the different elements of the race and where it's uneven. Now let's see, if I want to run a 6 minute mile, I need to run 90, 90, 90, 90. But in order to run those 90 second quarters, your effort level for each lap is actually going to be significantly different. The first lap, the effort for a 90 is really easy. But that third lap, you really have to concentrate and really knuckle down. And it's that toothache grind. That's where the tempo runs and the hills and the fartleks. You really concentrate on helping you relax through that pain on that third 400. Most people can sprint the end for that fast one at the end, but they don't know how to relax through the pain. It's easier to force it through the pain, but relaxing it. So the third quarter is the hardest part. But I think the best way to run a mile, no matter what your ability, is to run even splits. And then tap into your anaerobic system for the final 200 meters, and you pick it up by 2 or 3 seconds. So if you want to break 6 minutes for the mile, it's going 90, 90, 90, and then you run like an 87 for the last 400.
That's interesting, because yeah, I'd be tempted to think, oh, maybe you need to create a sort of time buffer with this stuff, where you kind of like, you kind of predict some slowing down, and then but hopefully you're ahead enough at that point. But actually, that doesn't work.
Well, you have two energy systems that you tap into, right? Your aerobic system and your anaerobic system. If you have crossed that red line before the sort of minute to go mark, you can't actually tap into the anaerobic system. That's like this. It's like your nitro button on a race car.
Yeah.
You don't actually have it as an option. So you want to be able to tap into it. But if you're too far behind time, like it doesn't matter how much you've pushed the nitro button, so you want to get as close to that red line as possible without crossing it. Mm. That applies to most races.
A real art. Did you always, real art did it right. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever use, what was the metric that you went with? Was it just perceived effort? Did you do a lot of heart rate stuff? What was your kind of, did you just guess kind of the whole thing? Right.
I mean, because I grew up running before all of this technology stuff was available, I didn't have those to rely on. So I slowly learned it over time. And my true love in running is single track trails. And you don't have any sort of metric to measure your output when you're on those anyway. It's just running to time and by feel. And so I'm sure I am going by heart rate, but it's like a internal gauge relative to myself. The biggest danger of people using heart rate is that they compare it to like a uniform measure of what everyone would average in the middle. But my baseline heart rate is going to be different to somebody else's, and we might both be the same level of ability running, but a 150 heart rate might be really hard for me, but it might be their jogging pace. So you got to only use it relative to your own ability.
Yeah, I find it fascinating, because that's the one sort of thing that I think that the modern evolution of running and the reliance on tech has kind of like almost robbed people of that ability to kind of assess themselves, how they feel, and like what feels correct and what doesn't. And that's why just a stopwatch and a distance, the track itself, is just such a perfect way of measuring your effort and being like, actually, if I'm honest with myself, it was horrible, but I could probably have done it a little bit faster. And then you realize that your threshold is actually that little bit more than just looking at a watch going, oh no, I did my heart rate was 175. That was zone five. I better chill out. Like, it's just the two things don't kind of work.
And that's the beauty of doing hill workouts, is that all of that gets thrown out the window. You have to just go by effort. And if you overcook it, then you actually can't get up the hill if it's steep enough. So it like forces you to have to like run conservatively and build into it.
He talks about running for New Zealand and what that means to him, and what an incredible sporting nation New Zealand is across, you know, everything from sailing to rugby to long distance running. Do you think there's something in the culture in New Zealand that creates really good sports people year after year?
I think at least when I was growing up, there's like a lot of opportunity to just explore your own interests. And I remember I would play four or five different sports in the same season because we only had one practice a week for each sport. And there was a lot of freedom as kids. We sort of made up our own sports a lot of the time. It seems like most of our really good athletes, though, don't come from the big cities. So like New Zealand has also become susceptible to the same issues that a lot of other places around the world have in the big cities, but it's more the people from the suburbs or out on the countryside, more so kids who grew up on the farms who got to sort of have a broad excellence in sport. But like, we've really struggled at tennis, gymnastics, swimming, all of the really technique based sports we haven't done well at. And I think that's because you need a much more rigid structure around like talent identification and like coaching right from a really young age. We excel in sports where you want to have a broad ability, and then you bring that together once people are teenagers. But if you need to be able to practice right from a young age, we've never done well at that stuff. Like, we're the worst tennis country in the world.
Yeah, it's true, actually. Yeah.
And we're pretty pitiful at swimming as well. And I think those are
As an island is surprising, because, you know, everyone's got to be, you know, you
some good
be triathletes, swimming
I guess,
right?
That's swimming, isn't it? But yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
No, but that's why we're good at triathlon, because it's like someone who's good at multi-sports.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, yeah, we don't have those money-hungry coaches, probably, systems in place to, like, profit off of youth sport.
Have you got any great aspirations with the record anymore? Like, now that you've done 20 consecutive years, do you feel that you can, you know, keep running the mile, but you've sort of like the record itself is just kind of like a thing now that continues? Or is the 4 minute thing not as important?
I would like to think that I'll be motivated again to go after another running goal at some stage, because I worry that if I don't, my body's gonna start, I'm not gonna look after my body in the same way. I really enjoy feeling fit and flexible. Like, stretching is the first thing to go out the window when you're not worrying about track racing anymore. But like, it's an amazing feeling when you're going through the whole like 3 or 4 week preparation before a big race where you do all of your stretches and your drills and your muscles feel unbelievably good. Like, you feel like a teenager again. I'm worried that I'll never get to experience that again unless I have like a real carrot to work towards. But the truth is, I don't really care about my personal running ambitions anymore. Like, I've done enough of all of that. I'm really excited to help other runners out by pacing them in workouts or races. But if there was one goal, it wouldn't be necessarily the sub-4 streak anymore. It'd be to see if I could do it as a 40-year-old.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But let's be honest, it's a little bit cheating, because with the new technology and spikes, it's probably worth 2 or 3 or 4 seconds anyway. So my 3:59 the other day is really like a 4:03 in the old technology. So.
Oh, no.
No, Nick, it's fine. You can't say that. It's legal. It's fine. You can do what you want.
Have you done, have you been back? Have you sort of gone old school and got out some old, just, you know?
Yeah, I did it the other day in training, because I only brought one spike down to practice by accident. And my friend had a pair of old like Asics cross country spikes in his kit. And I said, I'll wear those, no worries. And I'm sure there was like a bit of like a placebo effect, but like, I was struggling big time. You become quite dependent on the support structure of the new shoes that you can adapt to the old shoes, and I think I was one of the people who probably doesn't have much of a change because I already had like innate God-given strength in my ankles and foot structure to like, I didn't need the carbon rods to stay firm on my foot plant, right? But I think it definitely helps a lot of other people, and maybe me in my older years, who don't have quite that rigidity down there in the lower limbs.
Nick, thanks so much for making time to speak for us at Run as well. Brilliant to talk to you about all your achievements in the mile, and I hope that people listening will be inspired to try and run their own best mile, whatever speed that is. So thanks very much for your time.
Hey, cheers, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Nick. Thank you.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Do you know what, Rick? I think that we've had, I'm not going to show off now, our fair share of Olympians on our podcast. But every time that you speak to someone who's been at the sharp pointy end of doing running quickly, like the level of insight and just knowledge that they've accrued over the years and expert, that you just suddenly go, God, they're smart. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. I love what he was saying about the kind of polarizing his training to the point of these kind of 6 to 10, I think only 6 second sprints. And that's partly how he's getting his speed working. So he's not having to do the kind of really grueling, like 8x800 meters sessions, which are probably more common in sort of traditional running clubs in the UK, that although can be effective, can also very hard to get your head around mentally and maybe up the injury chances. He's testament to kind of this very consistent way of doing things. So I thought that was an interesting part of his training.
Yeah, when he was talking about the volume of work that he does as well, and it's something that I've spoken to my friend Andy, who is friends with Nick actually, who helped organize this podcast, and they're talking about and he mentions it then about the sort of Scandinavian approach that some of these guys, the Scandies, are taking, and sort of the volume of effort and sort of perceived, and not actually absolutely battering yourself at threshold, but sort of keeping it a bit lower down and making it more sustainable. It makes so much more sense. It kind of, you know, but it's not something I'm particularly knowledgeable on, so I'll let those guys explain more at some point. But it does, as you say, like consistency, and Nick was saying consistency being that key thing, and just sort of working towards things steadily, progressing through stuff, be it mileage or gym work or whatever physical thing it is that you're working on. Don't just kind of ramp everything up at once. It's just got to be such a steady progress, like that's how you get there.
Yeah, that was another really good point. I hadn't thought about it at all. Like you say, like speed work, we kind of think we can just jump into, don't we? Like, yeah, look, just go out and run a session, like, you know.
Training block starts this week. Like, okay, Tuesday, speed work. I better go and we'll smash out some 500, you know.
You can very quickly get injured. And then it's like, before you even get started, you're injured, or you're kind of slightly compromised because you tweak something. Whereas actually, like, yeah, let's think about building that gradually as well. And actually, yeah, then you may be able to put together a really consistent, exciting kind of training program over 5 or 6 months. But anyway, no, it was great. And yeah, as I was saying, one of the things I like about the mile is I think it's really, you can get great challenges all the way up. So like, you know, from sub 4 to sub 5 to sub 6, sub 7, sub 8, sub 9, sub 10, whatever kind of a great challenge is for you, it's something that you can quite easily train towards. You can get it wrong loads, like Nick was saying. Like, it's not like, oh no, the marathon, 6 months, you know, need another 6 months to try again. Like, you could try again in 6 days.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of...
And he's right. If you break the sort of, if you break a marathon into 4 quarters, each lap of the mile, each one of those, if you break the marathon into 4 quarters and sort of like consider the mile to be of similar quarters, first 5K of a marathon, cruising. Second 5K of the marathon, oh yeah, maybe. Third one, oh my God, what am I doing? So the final one is all just power and emotion and whatever it is. And it's the miles, you know, that third penultimate lap is where that time gets you, because it's when it really hurts. And then you just kind of like hopefully crack on with the last one. So yeah, it's I'd say it's good marathon prep. Certainly a condensed emotional roller coaster before a marathon is why everyone should do a mile.
I think that's a good point, mate. Often the third lap, the penultimate lap is the one, and his suggestion to relax during the pain, because I think there's that temptation when things get hard is to kind of tense up and be like, this is really hard. But if you can kind of stay if you can relax and know that it's difficult but that you can get through it, and that's probably the best way of going about it. But anyway, Nick Willis, thanks very much. What a man of insight and a man of great ability.
Exactly.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Huge thanks to our very special guest, Nick Willis, and to you, of course, for listening.
So you can subscribe to Runner's World magazine by going on the internet and Googling Runner's World UK subscription. There you will find it. Then you can pay your money and you'll get a magazine to your door every single month. And you'll be all the better for it. Please, you know, like, subscribe, everything that you do with podcasts. Tell your mum, tell your friends. Just search Runner's World UK podcast. They'll find it. They can subscribe too. Thank you for listening. You'll hear from us again next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.